Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And I know that some of you who are listening are probably thinking of yourselves as wantrepreneurs. Joining me today is an entrepreneur who maybe would have considered himself that. I think actually before we got started, he said, I wasn't even a wantrepreneur. I just thought that people who were entrepreneurs were these like other beings somewhere else. I didn't pay much attention to them and I didn't think that was a path for me. And he said, you know, there's something to be said for just listening to entrepreneurs tell their stories. Eventually, if it's for you, you start to realize, wait, I don't have to just listen. I could be the guy doing this. I could be the person building a company like that. Anyway, that's his path. And I wouldn't have known about it, except that I think it was like 2 days ago, my friend Neil Patel sent me a message. He said, Andrew, you've got to meet Gajan. He's a good entrepreneur. He's a lawyer who hated the law. He became a chief revenue officer and then went on to build a multi-million dollar business growing tech companies on a performance basis. Here's the part that he wanted me to highlight and to notice for myself. He says, Gajan grows their businesses and they pay. And if he loses money, do you take on the losses, Gajan? Did I understand that right?
They're never losses, but...
But guaranteeing it to that degree. Wait, if there were losses, whose pocket did it come out of?
Well, the beauty of experimentation is it's almost impossible to lose money, because if it doesn't work, you switch it off.
And all you're doing is A-B testing for businesses to help them squeeze more leads, get more revenue out of their existing traffic. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. That's Gajan Ratnasava. He is the founder of Spiralize. We're going to talk about how he did this. And if he says, look, the way that he did this, if there's someone out there who's looking to start and hasn't started, this is a model for you. And we'll talk about some of that. Thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first, if you don't have a website, you need one, go to HostGator.com/Mixergy. They'll get you a great website, good price. The second, if you're
HostGator.
HostGator.
I was going to say, that's awesome. That is the company we started with.
I freaking love that. So many people I interview will say they started on HostGator. And these days, HostGator will scale up.
They're one of the OGs.
I think a lot of the other ones almost became embarrassments or became swallowed up by the same HostGator parent company. The second sponsor is a company that if you're looking to get into A-B testing, if you're looking to do your own landing pages and your own conversion, you should go get to know ClickFunnels. They didn't even pay me for this, but I feel bad about something. I'll tell you why I'm going to do this ad for them for free. First, Gajan, how much revenue are you doing right now? Give me the number.
Last year, we did $3
million. $3 million. Okay. And how much profit?
I'm not going to share that one.
Will you say if it's over $1 million?
I'm not going to share that one.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Before this, you were working at a pathology lab. That's where you helped them generate more money. How did you do it for them? What's one example that you did for them?
So big businesses often have little dials that you can turn to make them more profitable. A quirk of the American insurance system is that if you and I are both doctors, pathologists, and the same patient comes in and sends a specimen to you and a specimen to me, and we do the exact same work, because you might have a different contract with that person's insurance company, you might get paid triple what I get paid. You might get, for the same exact, they're called CPT codes or procedures, you might get $600. And I might get $200. And it'll be different with different insurers. So there can be an insurer where I get $600 and you get $400. So my big idea for this company, we've done hundreds of millions of dollars worth of these cases, was instead of just assigning cases randomly in the morning and saying, Andrew, you get 20 cases and Gajan, you get 20 cases. What if every morning we did some math and shuffled those cases? Now, it can be a little complicated because you might have labs in lots of different locations, but that's why FedEx exists. Every morning, someone gets up really early, says, look at all the cases coming in, look at the insurers, and let's just shuffle them. So Andrew gets the cases that pay him really well, because Jean gets the cases that pay him really well.
That makes so much sense if you think about it. Was it hard to implement?
It was very hard to implement. Just there was a lot of resistance, but it's the same kind of thing you see in the lean startup world of You start small. You say, okay, well, I can't shuffle all 10,000 cases. I'm just going to take 100 cases and I'm going to do it in the most manual, inefficient way possible. I started doing it myself and then I hired a temp and had the temp just manually walk these 100 cases around, looked and measured results and said, did it work? we filed insurance claims, seeing if it came in. Great, starting to work. Okay, let's start to automate more of it.
So how much money did you make for them, bottom line?
So they made an extra $8 million a year in profit.
Okay.
Just from shuffling cases.
All right, now you were an employee at the company.
Yes.
You got a salary, but you also got a bonus. How much? You made them $8 million. What was your bonus roughly?
Yeah, $8 million a year, which for a company, you should really think of it as $80 or $160 million because companies are valued in a multiple of...
Right.
So I'm pretty excited. I'm like, this is going to be a good year. I told my wife and my boss, he's like, Gajan, the review, this is awesome. You're killing it. This came at the right time. The company really needed the money. Here's your bonus. And so I look at it? It was like $2,000 or $3,000. And that's there's nothing that's real money. But
wow,
it was a tiny fraction of my salary. It wasn't what I was expecting. And so I said, hey, you know, we made the company $100 million here. I got 2,000. And he's like, well, it was a bad year for the company. And you got a really good bonus compared to other people. I started backpedaling. And I was, and that for me was kind of a breaking point. I was like, well, this doesn't make sense.
And so, Gajan, that's the point where you said, I think I'm going to go all in on entrepreneurship?
Yeah, it was pretty soon after that. Because I was doing a bunch of stuff on the side, but I never thought I would leave my job. But that kind of put the nail in the coffin.
Let's talk about some of the stuff you did on the side. You grew up in Australia. You said a lot of people who you knew just weren't thinking about entrepreneurship. Your parents worked for the government. This wasn't you. But you started to dabble a little bit with, what was it that you were selling on eBay at first?
Muscle stimulators. So they're these weird things from like the 90s, 2000s that were advertised on infomercials, and you strapped them onto your abs and fire electrical impulses. And, you know, in theory, you'd get six-pack abs.
While watching television, because it would fire an electrical impulse, which would force your stomach to, your ab muscles to contract like they were working out. And then they would relax, then contract again at the next muscle. And it's like, I guess, according to the ads, like doing sit-ups, except you could actually sit up and watch television. And that's what you were selling on eBay.
Yes. Except I will tell anyone that wants to try them, it is not relaxing. It is really intense. It is not a passive sport.
Ah, okay. I always imagine I just sit on the couch and eat while I'm doing this. No, you're saying it. You really feel the pain of it.
Oh, yeah. Like it is as strong a contraction as you can imagine.
Okay.
It's more like, have you got a cramp or Charlie horse?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Did it work?
For the abs, it doesn't work at all because the problem is the Cheetos you're eating.
Okay. You know what? That's the part that really frustrates me about working out. It's not enough to even run a marathon, because you run a marathon, it's what? I burn 2,600 calories when I do 26.2 miles. That's only 2,600 calories. I could burn that at a nice dinner with drinks with friends, right?
I know.
So it's not that much. It's really what you eat matters more than I imagined.
I had the same experience. You know, the stat, there's a stat, the average person that trains for a marathon, where when you're training, you know, you're running 50 miles a week.
Yep.
Like you're really burning calories. The average person that trains for a marathon will actually put on weight because it ramps up your appetite, right?
Yeah.
And you feel justified. You're like, I can eat that. I just ran 20 miles this morning.
All right. So then the ab machine didn't actually undo all that. It didn't work for giving people abs. What about for you as a business? Did you make money? What happened with that?
So I learned a ton. And you'll kind of see this theme through all these businesses of, I definitely made money, but the other part is you're getting the flywheel going, you're learning these skills, and then they all end up coming together. And what was interesting is I learned how to, you know, reach out to a distributor, buy in bulk, and I was selling them on eBay and had these great margins because I was the only one selling. And then what happens on eBay is when people realize you're making money, other people start doing it. Right? And so your margins get competed away. The only way they know how to compete is they cut the price. And so then you have to cut the price. And so I had this great idea. I noticed a lot of people that I'd sell them to, they wouldn't get the most out of it because they didn't know how to use it. Because they came with crappy instructions. They were made in China, minimal documentation. And so just over time, I learned how to use it because I'd use it on myself, as you can tell in my ripped physique. And so I was like, okay, I'll write an ebook. and I wrote an ebook and I bundled it with the product. So I escaped. I could charge a little more than my competitors because people would pay more to get the thing with the ebook. What I didn't realize is, again, eBay is the dregs of humanity. It's a terrible business. Don't do it. Isn't my competitors just took my ebook and then bundled my ebook.
They copied it.
Yeah. They didn't even change the cover.
Wow. Wow. That's so frustrating.
And so at some stage, I had like 100 left over, and I gave them to everyone I knew for Christmas that day.
One of the other ideas of yours actually, or one of the other businesses did better. It was the electronic dog fences.
Yes. Fences.
What was that?
That was the first business that really hit. So for those of you with a dog, don't know what a dog fence is, it's an American thing. If your dog is escaping from your yard, or you live in, like in the Midwest, a lot of people don't have yards. It's a training device that trains your dog to stay in your yard. And there's this company, it's an awesome company, it's called Invisible Fence, and they put them in for you, and they cost about $2,000. So the only downside of this company is it's $2,000. And there are these DIY kits that are like $300, but they come with basically zero instructions. So you don't know how to install it. Installing it's quite complicated. You don't know how to train your dog on it. Again, quite complicated. And you imagine if your dog is escaping from your yard and it's missing for hours, you're terrified, right? And your neighbors are complaining. You're not in a good emotional place. It's a very stressful event. So I had this situation with my dogs, and I paid this Invisible Fence company, and then I moved, and I was house poor. I just bought this giant house. And I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm going to put it in myself. I put it in, but it took a ton of time. And so I was young and optimistic, and I was like, I'm going to document it. I'll put it all online. And so I made this great blog. It was this guide to how you do it, and there was nothing at all online. And people started coming. And then one night, I was like, I'm just going to start selling the fence, because people would often email me with questions, and they'd say, well, who should I buy it from? So I stayed up. And I was working, I was a lawyer at the time, and I'm working 24/7. I stayed up until 2 a.m. building a Yahoo store. And it was 2 a.m, and I was wired when I finally finished and pushed this thing live. And I couldn't go to sleep straight away, so I watched some TV show for an hour. As I went to go to bed, there was a sale at 2 a.m. And so I'm a McKinsey guy, so I'm doing spreadsheets in my head, and I'm like, oh, so if I sell one an hour, every hour, I mean, this gazillionaire. Now I really can't sleep. I go down to bed because I know I need to get up early the next day. I wake up my wife. This is going to be awesome.
Was it? It was.
We sold nothing for the next 7 days.
Oh, okay.
But then, you start putting together pieces, right? You need to do this SEO stuff. And then we got traffic. And then you need to do, I learned how to A-B test to get more of the people that were there to buy. And at the time, it didn't feel like it. But in retrospect, it was a rocket ship. It went from like zero to like $4 million in like 2 or 3 years.
Because of SEO?
Because of combination of SEO and then A-B testing, because SEO got you the traffic there, but then you needed to figure out why should people buy from you instead of Amazon or Walmart. It was a great business in some ways, because in the old days, there was a lot of what's called MAP pricing, which that stands for minimum advertised price. It means the manufacturer says, you cannot sell this product for less than this price. And so it would give you this big, big fat margin. But the downside was, because you couldn't discount, you need to convince the consumer why they should buy from you. So we learned a lot about testing and optimizing on that side.
What did you optimize with and what did you learn with at the time? Spiralize now is just killer good at this. When you were just figuring it out, what are some of the first things that you learned?
The first thing we learned is great design had almost nothing to do with conversion.
Okay. And what did improve sales then?
So what really worked was just testing everything. Instead of just saying, okay, we're going to make this improvement, push it out live, is to say, okay, we're going to make this improvement and we're going to show that to half the visitors, and half the visitors get the old, and we'll measure. And some of the things will work and some things won't. One huge thing for us was if we could get someone to call in, we had these awesome people working for us. They knew this product inside out. And if someone called in to ask a question, they would always buy from us. Because if you call Amazon and you're having a problem with your dog fence, like, good luck.
Right. Right. So the fact that they called meant that they knew after the sale, someone would be there.
Yes.
Got it.
So they might have some technical question, But as soon as they called and talked to our people, and our people were good to about closing the deal, then answer the question, and then they'd say, hey, you ready to buy now?
Oh, they would just do that right there. Okay.
Yeah. And if the person said no, we weren't pushy enough. In retrospect, we should have been more pushy. If the person wasn't ready, we would just ask them like, hey, do you want us to follow up with you? And often they'd say, yeah, call next Tuesday. Close the deal.
So then who would you get to answer and make all these calls?
That was another learning. At first, I answered all of them, and which is actually great because you learn the business and you learn the kinds of things people are asking, and then you put that on the website. We hired a couple guys that we trained, and they kind of evolved from customer service to just running the whole business. Two brothers, the Riojas brothers, they were just awesome, and they loved the business and treated it like their own.
And they were full-timers with you, or this was part of their work?
One of them started full-time, and then eventually got too much for him, and he hired his brother. And so between the two of them, the fulfillment was all handled by someone else, but between the two of them, they could handle all the customers. But okay. You're asking what worked. So how do you get people to call in? You know, we tried everything, intellectual arguments with people about what, trying to persuade them. And then it turned out the thing that really worked was we put the face of one of my employees, I think it was their stepdad, and had an, in the header and said, call Stu, and had a phone number. People called and they asked for Stu, and it was epic. That single tweak was worth about 20%. It really changed the business.
And then of course, when they called, it wasn't Stu who was there. They'd say, sorry, Stu's not available, but I can help you. Got it.
At some stage, we're just like, just be Stu.
Of course. That makes sense. So I know your wife has a website called, is it okay for me to say what her site is?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. It's babysignlanguage.com. You guys have had it, I think, since 2011. Am I right?
Maybe even earlier, because I have a 10-year-old and it predates her. So.
Okay. So it seems like even now on the website, I clicked contact. I said, let me check. Are they still doing this stuff? And I saw a phone number, and it's an 855 phone number. Does it go to a real human being?
It goes to a voicemail.
Okay. All right. And even that helps with sales, I imagine, because people just want to know that there's some phone number, even if they don't test it. Will you tell me?
Yeah, I think so. Things change over time. And back when we started the dog fence business, e-commerce was relatively new. I'd say 50% of the calls, they didn't really have a question. They just wanted to make sure, like, are you a real person? Is this a real thing?
Yeah.
And they didn't want to put their credit card in online. The calls were really just their way of feeling out, like, is this a real business? And they'd give us their number, their credit card number over the phone. Now, I was never quite sure what they thought we did with their credit card number, because we would just type their credit card number into the internet. But yeah. We didn't discuss that with them.
What happened to the business?
The baby sign language or the dog fence or both?
The dog fence. Baby sign language you still have. I saw your wife wrote a book. I saw it on Amazon and all these other bookstores. What about the dog fence business?
The dog fence business. So with all these businesses, we start them, staff them up, and then kind of move on to the next thing. And so the dog fence business just, and it's beautiful. Like, it's someone just writes you a check every month for work that you did 5 years or 10 years ago. It churned out money for maybe 8 years, and it just went into further and further decline. And maybe a year or two ago, we finally switched it off.
Yeah, I see. The website now just says, this account has been suspended. Contact your hosting provider. It's dogfencedly.com. Fenced. Wait, what is it? Dogfencediy.com. Now I get it.
Yeah.
Got it. Wow. All right. Let me take a moment, talk about my first sponsor, and then we'll come back in and figure out, now that you had this background and you finally realized, look, working for a company, even if I make them a lot of money, is not going to be my way of growing with them. You decided you were going to start your own thing. I want to know how you came up with the idea for it. But first, if you're listening to me and you've heard me talk about HostGator, if you like all, let's talk about ClickFunnels, since we just talked about A/B testing. ClickFunnels does a lot of A/B testing, a lot of quick landing page creation. How would you recommend that somebody uses ClickFunnels to create a quick landing page for an idea, or what A/B tests would you recommend that they do, since ClickFunnels is so good at making A/B tests easy?
Well, the first thing is just start, right? Just throw anything out there. The beauty of testing is that you're going to keep improving this every 2 weeks. Just get something out there, get it in market. And then the biggest thing you can do is just talk to your customers. And what you really want to talk to, the mistake people make is they talk to everybody, right? What you really want to talk to is people on the bubble. So imagine 100 people come to your website, 2 end up buying. 90 of those 100 people are just never going to buy anything from you ever. Mm-hmm. Just the reality. But there are probably another 8 that nearly bought but didn't. And what you really want to talk to are those 8 people on the bubble.
How do you contact them?
Yeah, so that's the hard part. The mistake people make is they survey everybody because it's easy, or they survey just the people that bought, again, because it's easy. People that bought are okay, but they like you too much. It's like asking your mother for feedback, mm-hmm. right? How do you get people on the bubble? There are a bunch of techniques. You know, one is if someone's been on your site a long time, this is what I find really effective, is to just ask them. So you could pop a modal up that says, hey, is there anything stopping you buying today? Another thing you could do is offer them money, like say, hey, we're trying to talk to some customers. Can we send you a $50 Amazon gift card to talk to you for 15 minutes now? It's got to be now, because a day later, they've forgotten and they're making stuff up.
Okay.
And then just have a real conversation with them. The same way you would if you managed a retail store and you saw lots of people coming in and just leaving. Just be like, hey, you know, you just shine up your badge and you'd be like, hey, Andrew, I noticed you came in. I noticed you picked up that widget and you looked at it and then you left. I'm just curious. Tell me what happened. And you will say things. Some of those things will just blow my mind. Right? Favorite example is we had a SaaS client, cloud SaaS client, huge SaaS client. And when we asked customers, 10% of them said, I'm not buying because I don't know if it works on a Mac.
And it's SaaS, which means it works in any web browser just about.
Yeah, the question doesn't even make sense, right? Which is why we never answered it.
Right.
But sure enough, when we answered the nonsensical question, we put little Mac and PC logos all over the site, and we tested it, 10% wow. higher sales.
You know, one way that I found to figure out to talk to people who are almost buyers is
yes.
to put out an offer, to ask it, to break up the payment or process into 2 steps. Step 1, give me your name and email. Step 2, give me your credit card. Anyone who doesn't put in their credit card, I'll follow up at least via email automatically and say, personal email and say, I noticed you didn't buy, tell me why not. And sometimes I will take their email address, put it into iMessage. And if it turns into an iMessage
yes.
bubble thing, then I just call them or text message them.
That's awesome. And I think what you said about just being human, just personalized message, because what you want is as representative of a sample as possible. You don't want, when you send out like a mass email, you tend to get, you know, what I think of as serial complainers, right? And they'll say, the price is too high. It doesn't have some weird, obscure feature. And those people are often just full of shit. They weren't going to buy anyway, and they're just making shit up. That personalized message of just like, hey, I'm the owner. I'm not trying to sell you anything. Just curious. And they'll tell you stuff. And then it's up to you to grade it and triage it. But they'll tell you stuff. And some of it you'll be like, I can't believe I'm seeing this for the first time. You won't be able to unsee it.
For anyone who's listening to me, the reason that I like ClickFunnels is because they make this stuff really easy. You can quickly put up a web page. It looks really nice and just drag and drop the elements that you're looking for. So if you decide, hey, this guy Andrew suggested that I break up my offer into 2 pages, just drag and drop a name and email field onto page 1. They'll give you a template for page 2. And on page 2, you can ask for a credit card and they'll tie into Stripe. They'll make it easy for you to collect payment. But if anyone doesn't follow through, you now have their email address and you can follow up with them. If you decide from one of my future emails or one of my future interviews, you hear somebody say, once somebody buys, make them an offer for something else, especially since you have their credit card in your system. And you say, I want to try that. Again, drag and drop in ClickFunnels and you'll be able to use this. They bought a bunch of ads for me. I guess I didn't kill it for them with the ads. So they said, Andrew, don't worry about it. Don't even do ads for us for ClickFunnels. And so instead talk about our podcast, which I did. And I think I got them a good number of people to go subscribe to their podcast, but I feel bad that they didn't get enough customers of ClickFunnels because it is a tool that I love. And so I'm saying this for free. I don't expect them to buy another ad again. This is not what it's for. It's just to say, I want them to do well. And I want anyone who's listening to me to really understand ClickFunnels freaking rocks. And you won't know about it until you try it for yourself. I didn't until I tried it. So I'm going to let you try it for free by going to clickfunnels.com/mixergy. When you do, you get to try it for free. If you're not happy, just move on. If you are happy, it will change the way you do business because all these ideas that you have in your head will suddenly turn into action. clickfunnels.com/mixergy. Action, which will then grow your revenue.
And you can test really easily on ClickFunnels. So
yeah,
you throw something up.
Copy anything that you throw up, there's a copy right. And then turn it into an A-B test, right?
And I always say the first version of everything, it never works. First version never works, right? And so the game is just keep iterating. Like I remember the first version of the Dog Fence site, maybe 1 in 1,000 people bought. And eventually we got it to about 2 in 100, right? Just a 20x difference. And so think about, and I was just refining over the course of a couple of years.
Did you get to pull good money out of that?
Really good money.
You did. Okay.
It bought my house 10 years ago. I still live in.
So why were you still working then full time, considering that this thing was showing success?
It didn't seem real. It didn't seem real. And you know, my mom had a job. My dad had a job. Mm. Everyone I knew had a job. It just didn't occur to me. I was like, I can do them both. I can do them both.
Seems like almost a hobby, not a real life goal. What did your parents do?
They both worked for the government. Yeah.
Doing what?
They were both accountants.
Okay. All right. How'd you come up with the idea for Spiralize?
So I was at this consulting firm, McKinsey, mm-hmm. and
not just a this lot of consulting firm. It's the top consulting firm in the country. It's the brand.
So it's where kind of all of the fancy MBAs go. And you consult for big companies and work on big problems and try and figure out how to turn the profit dials. And every MBA that works in a big company is secretly a frustrated small business owner. Mm-hmm. And so at lunch, they'd talk about their business ideas and I'd talk about what I was doing. And occasionally a client would be like, oh, that's interesting. Could you do that for us? And so at some stage, I was like, yeah. And so a lot of these split testing ideas where you could get more revenue or more leads out of your existing traffic, big companies didn't test at all at the time. They still, for the most part, don't test. And testing is basically like free money. I always say it's like having a eccentric uncle that owns a casino. And they say, hey, Andrew, come in anytime you want. Play all the hands of blackjack you want. If you win, you keep the money. If you lose, don't worry about it. And so the dominant strategy is to do two things. It's play every hand of blackjack you possibly can, right? And the second is, you know, play good hands every time. So the same tools that we could use to grow the small dog fence business, we found you could use to grow, especially enterprise SaaS companies. You could.
So your first big customer was it Netflix? I went back and looked at what the website looked like. It seemed like, so Netflix, how'd you get Netflix as a customer?
It was pure luck. We knew someone and they already had a team, but they had this one thorny problem. And I think they took pity on us. I think they knew we had just opened the firm. And they sent us this business, and it was
awesome. What type of problem are we talking about?
Can't go too much into it, but they had just gone international, and they weren't seeing the conversion rates they expected in these international markets.
Okay. Did you call your company Spiralize at the time?
I think we went through a couple of names, and at first we did a bunch of stuff. I think we called ourselves Sandhill SEO at the start because my partner was in Palo Alto. And it, just over time, it became clear that the most value we added to customers was the A-B testing. And so we morphed into Spiralize.
And so Spiralize is what? Like the spiral of improvements? We're going to do that for you?
Yes, this epic upward increase in revenue and profitability. That was the vision.
Who is your there was another co-founder. It was you, your wife was listed on the site as a co-founder, right?
She was definitely part of it early on, but okay. I had a business partner who I had worked with. He was my boss.
Ali. Varoff Zach.
Is that Varoff was one of Ali's friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Ali Nasser.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He was
brilliant guy.
Your boss and the co-founder.
He was my boss at a previous job, and we both kind of left at some stage and started Spiralize.
And what happened to him?
I think we got to a certain size, and actually last year I bought out his stake.
You did?
Okay. Yeah.
I felt also that maybe you put your wife on the site with her maiden name to make it feel like it was a bigger team coming on, right?
We did exactly that.
That's not even the name that she uses on her books. McAlpin, right?
Yeah, McAlpin was her maiden name. So,
okay. And so this was you trying to hustle?
One is we wanted to look bigger than we were because we started with two. The second is if I put her married name on, people would realize she has extraordinarily poor judgment and would never hire her.
It does feel like, well, all right, is it a family-run business or not? And you got that out of the way. You told me, hey, look, Andrew, you want to know the hard time? It was after Netflix. We got Netflix, and then what happened that was so painful?
Yeah, so we got Netflix, and maybe one or two big ones. We're like, this is great. This is easy. We can kill it. And especially after that, we're like, we just say we work for Netflix. But the phone didn't ring. It didn't ring. It didn't ring. It didn't ring. And I think it was completely our fault, especially having come out of McKinsey and being really junior there. I had no idea how business comes in the door. And it just as a junior person there, business just turns up. It seems magical and you just pick up the phone. For our little company, it just didn't. Business didn't come in the door. No one was ringing. No one cared. And so we realized we had to go out and generate business. And we really had no idea for several years how to do that.
What are some of the bad ideas that you had for doing it?
I don't know about bad ideas, but bad execution, like content marketing never really worked for us. Random networking meetings. For a while, we did this. Sorry, I'll turn this off. For a while, we did this stupid thing that we read online of you like calling people to network with them, which is a terrible idea because they assumed we actually wanted to network, and you know we were trying to sell them something, and it was just a bad, bad idea.
I've seen people do stuff like that. Why didn't you say, you know what? I got really good results from selling products. Why do I need these companies to validate me? I'll just go create more products. I'll go on Alibaba. I'll go to China. I'll just make my own. I'll create eBooks.
Yeah. So I was definitely doing that and continue to do that on the side. The challenge with these businesses, at least the way I did them, is they're quite capital intensive for the first year. But then you get this annuity for the rest of your life. Like if you think about that baby sign language business, it's probably $100,000 put into it and a lot of effort in year one. And then essentially, if you go to the site, you can see no one has touched it in 10 years.
No, I don't agree with that. The other side, I saw that. This, I get the details no one's touched, but I like that somebody said, hey, parents are in lockdown over COVID. We're going to write a blog post talking about how this could be a good time to work on sign language, and here are some of our free resources. Not the most in-depth work, no, but you did something.
So when I say don't do anything, part of setting it up in the first year is hiring the right people. So I have no idea that they wrote that blog post, but I will compliment them on it.
So this was not you doing it. It was someone's going in, it's working, got it. So you're saying, look,
right,
Andrew, I could have created more of these businesses, but it would have taken a lot of money up front.
I was.
You were.
But you can't. You need to balance out the cash flow of doing things that bring cash in immediately.
Consulting we're talking about with Spiralize brings in money faster.
Right.
Got it. Okay. So
the flip side is leverage, right? Because if I double the size of my own business, right? Let's say the baby sign language business is doing $100,000 a year and you double the size. It's, you know, you make another extra $100,000, which is great. It's nothing to sneeze at. if you take a big business, like let's say Netflix, and you got them even 2% more business, I don't know what their market cap is, but a 2% increase in their conversion rate turns out to be about a 6% increase in enterprise value, which is probably a couple billion dollars.
Got it. Okay.
It's $5 or $6 billion, right? That seems like crazy math, but it's true. So the amount of fee that a client will pay on a large business is often orders of magnitude more than we would get working on our own.
And you said, all right, we can take a piece. Did you from the beginning say, I'll just take a piece of this?
Early on, we decided that a performance model was more fun. It was what we liked doing. It was skin in the game. You know, every morning I'd get up checking the client's stats because we have skin in the game, and it made us move fast. And when the client won, we'd have a bigger smile on our faces. They did. And they were happy about paying the bills.
But were you charging fixed price at the time or charging a percentage?
It's still split. Some of our clients, especially the Netflixes of the world, want a fixed price engagement.
Okay.
And we get that. But about half our clients are just purely success fee. And that for us is our idea of a good time. We like that.
Okay. I think I saw in the beginning, it wasn't that you would only get paid if you delivered results. I think I saw that your marketing said, we will hunt for the big wins in your data and we guarantee results. So it wasn't like we get paid if we do this, but we guarantee that you'll get paid, that you'll make money or else we won't. All right. I get it. What did you do after Netflix that involved big printouts? Yeah. Talk about what you did there.
This is humiliating, but this is actually the business. I think you asked me this really interesting question of what's the business you would start if you had to start from scratch. I realized there are lots of big companies that have really crappy websites. Like you get there and you're like, this is awful. And they'll often redesign it and it'll still be awful. And the problem is it just turns out to be quite hard to buy taste or judgment or good design, or it gets a site gets killed by committee, right? You get a good designer in and the person in marketing wants this thing, and the person in sales wants this thing, and the CEO has an opinion too, and it becomes a mess. So we would unilaterally, we actually go to office buildings here in Atlanta, and we'd look at the directory and we'd do some recon and see kind of which of these businesses are big. We'd look them up on LinkedIn and then we'd knock on the door, pretend to be lost, scout around and just make sure they had money. Because sometimes the website was crappy because the company was crappy and had no money.
Okay. So you could, by looking around, you can see there are a lot of people here. They've got...
They're spending on furniture. They're spending, right?
Yeah.
People are well-dressed. This is a business that's winning, not dying. And then we just redesign the homepage.
Okay.
Without telling, we wouldn't have any conversation with them. And then we would print it out. We bought this big printer and we print it out on this big bit of photo paper. And then we'd glue it onto poster board and it was beautiful. It had a stand on the back. So it would be like 3 feet by 2 feet, big. The key was big. And then I would walk in to their office uninvited with the thing under my arm. There's something about carrying something.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, less security 5 years ago. And you'd walk in to receptionist and say, I'm here to see so-and-so. Or even better, if the receptionist wasn't there, you'd just find them. You'd wander the hallways, hey, I'm looking for Andrew.
Right.
And if you had the big thing under their arm, they almost always let you through.
Mm-hmm.
Because they assumed you'd, and you'd kind of, you'd angle it so they'd see it was their weapon. Is that the new website? They're like, I have to talk to Andrew about it. You'd go in and you'd see Andrew, and like 2 times out of 10, they'd throw you out. But what was interesting is about 10% of the time, they would essentially buy it on the spot. They would see it. It would be what they want. And what was great about that was it was very inexpensive to fulfill the business because there wouldn't be a bunch of back and forth. What you showed them is what you sold them, right? That's what they wanted. What's really interesting, though, is we'd get another 10% converting. They would throw us out, and we'd leave the bit of cardboard there on the stand. It was important that it had a stand put on their desk.
You'd buy them a stand and everything. Put the whole thing.
Yeah, up. It was a little cardboard stand that glued on the back.
I've seen those, out. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
You can get them at like any binders or.
I'm on Amazon right now, actually, looking to see what this printer costs. I can get it for less than $2,000. Checking to see what.
HP has a subscription thing too, which they charge you per page. And if you're printing full color pages, it's a really good deal. You should do it. So we print out, we'd leave it there. And psychologically, I think what happened is it's very hard to throw out something that's nice and big. It doesn't fit in the trash can. And someone else would walk into their office and say, Andrew, is that the new website? That looks way better than what we have now. And you get this call a week, 2 weeks, sometimes a month later. And they'd be like, hey. And we'd glue our business card on the back next to the stand. They'd say, hey, can you, that website, man, it looks really good. Can you come in and talk? My boss wants to talk about it. And so about 2 in 10 would end up closing.
That's a killer idea. You know what? I had somebody come into my office with a big board with my site on it and some bullet. It wasn't my site because he wanted to redesign it. He wanted to help me rethink my business. And of course he comes in here. You can't say no. The person clearly did work, right?
Right.
And you'd be an idiot to be someone who'd pass up a hustler like that. So of course we sat down, we had a conversation, and like you said, I kept that freaking cardboard thing that he created for years. I don't know what I thought. In retrospect, it wasn't until COVID that I finally said I have to throw some things out to be lighter. That when I did, I realized I could have just taken a picture of this, but it seemed like there was so much work involved in it. I didn't want to get rid of it. All right. This second sponsor is HostGator, your first hosting company. Many people who I've interviewed, their first hosting company. When I asked you before the interview started, what idea would you have for somebody who is listening to us who is a wantrepreneur or a notapreneur and thinking about it, you said this idea that we did, that's the one to steal. So I'm going to suggest anyone out there who wants to get started, you don't have to barge into people's offices, though you still frankly could slowly make your way into offices, I'm noticing. But if you
wear a mask if you're going to do it.
Wear a mask, leave it outside their desk, let them look at it. I do find that in general, if you start creating things for people, they're so much more likely to use it. So whatever first services still work, people still want stuff done for them. They don't want to do it themselves. I was actually supposed to do this interview using Riverside's video software for doing interviews. It looks beautiful, but I have one little freaking change to make. And I said, I'll just stick with Zoom for one more interview. And so I didn't use it. If the founder would have said, Andrew, let me just set this thing up for you. Here's your account. Just go to town. I'd be in. That's the way ClickFunnels was set up for me. I just kept using it. Anyway, so services, still very big. People still want stuff done for them. And yes, if you just start off by showing them what you could do for them, it could be a big plasterboard. What is it called? Plasterboard? It's the thing that you put it on.
Poster board.
Big poster board. Or I've even seen it just be, here's a link, something that I created for you. That's big. No, the poster
physical
board
is bigger. Huge.
Physical is huge.
Physical is huge.
Physical is, I can't.
Because we emailed them because we thought, well, let's service the rest of the country.
Doesn't work.
Email, no. It works, but much lower conversion rate.
Still, drop it off at their home or office, give it to them right there. That's what you're suggesting. All right, bring that idea over. One COVID business that I started was for this guy, Andrew, who works at the zoo. Drew from the zoo was really big on doing Zoom sessions with my kids and teaching them about how insects work, how a snake eats, showing them the whole thing. It was so much fun. I said, can I create a site for you where others could hire you to do one of these sessions for their kids? He said, yeah, we did it. He got paid and he's running the site now. And we did it all on HostGator, and I didn't have much time because my kids were still being homeschooled at that period. And so while they were playing for a bit, I sat down with HostGator. I created a brand new account. I want to know the whole experience A to Z. And I just started playing around until I came up with what the idea would be. And I built it. I gave it to him, and now he's got it. If you're out there and you haven't started a website, go create a HostGator account. It'll just get you started. It'll let you experience it. If you're not happy, of course, they've got a guarantee on it. If you are happy, you're going to get the lowest price available if you use my URL, and you'll get tagged as a Mixergy customer. That's HostGator.com/Mixergy. HostGator.com/Mixergy. And by the way, Mixergy wasn't hosted on them for a while. I then switched over. Nobody knew it. Nobody could tell. The only thing that we finally did was we put a logo on as to give them credit. Nobody knows because HostGator just freaking works. Oh, the only difference is now my price is lower. I go into QuickBooks and I see lower price. If you're out there, move over to HostGator. Save yourself some money. All right. You now had your customers. You had to start to create a process for working with them. What was the process that you created to allow you to generate real results for them?
Yeah. So I think in the early days, it was just super ad hoc. It would be go talk to the business owner. It was very freewheeling. It a life lesson, kind of learned the hard way, is it didn't scale at all, right? Because there's only one of me. It was also, I think, frustrating for the owner because they didn't really know what to expect. There was no structure.
It was just you thinking through, here's what right. I think would work, being an artist and coming up with solutions. Got it. Okay.
And they had no timelines. They had no budget, you know. So just over the course of time, started to develop processes and documenting them was really important. And so then as you added more people, these processes would grow and get more complicated. And you'd learn from experience that something would go wrong or something would go right. You'd be like, okay, let's amend the process. And so
what does your process look like now? Is it, I asked Neil Patel this, he created a digital agency. I said, what is your process for setting this stuff up? Do you have a checklist? And he said, no, that doesn't work. People need to have more flexibility. Do you work with the checklist?
We are huge users of checklists and process documents.
Really?
There's a great service called Process Street where you can create processes and document. Yeah. But if you want to start out, just Google Doc, Google Spreadsheet would work. And documenting them and evolving them. And they can get quite complex because now we work on these kind of big enterprise accounts. A big thing is quality control. You know, if you build a page for them, that should just be perfect on every device. And so we used to rely on the brilliance of our people, right? And just over time realized, well, that's kind of fragile, right? If they're having a bad day, what if you have to hire new people and everyone can't be that brilliant? And so we just create a process. And obviously the first versions tend to be pretty rough, but I think the checklist for when we quality control a client site has like 75 items or something like that.
Really?
And every time something goes wrong or something goes very right, there's a weekly kind of debrief meeting where all the people in a particular department meet and talk about what's gone right, what's gone wrong, and if the process needs to change or evolve. So they say, oh, you know, this edge case happened on a form on Safari. So like, oh, let's amend the process. Or, hey, it went really well when we framed a discussion with a client with this visual aid. So great, let's amend the process. So we're big, big users of process.
And so you could even come up with new A/B testing ideas using a checklist?
Yeah, so we use a database and we capture all the results from our tests. We also go out and scrape the internet and try and steal other people's A/B tests, put them all in a database. It's basically a big checklist. So when a new client comes in the door, we say, oh, what tests have we run on people that like you or had similar problems to you?
Okay.
And we say, okay, this test has won 6 times out of 7. Let's start with this one. You know, this other test is one time out of 5. Let's put that toward the end of the list.
What are you doing to scrape A/B tests from other people?
Our engineers just built a crawler that goes out and it essentially screenshots the entire site and then looks for visual. It does it from several different IPs and then it looks for visual differences. And it then, with a bit of human intervention, says, oh, this person's running a test. And then we come back a couple of weeks later. And we say, has it resolved to one of those two versions?
Okay.
That probably won.
Got it. Wow. What are you using to test using different IPs? Is that just Amazon Web Services?
No, it's Rocket something.
Okay.
There are a bunch of these services. They're built for people that are doing usually nefarious things like trying to bomb Ticketmaster to buy tickets
Okay.
When a concert comes out,
But I get what you're talking about. Yeah. So you're using one of these services. And as I'm doing a search here, I can find a bunch of scraping sites.
Scrapebox is awesome tool for scraping. And there are a bunch of utilities that are services that work with Scrapebox to provide all these different IPs. And so we repurposed one of those services.
You know what? So Scrapebox looks like a prime candidate for somebody to remake their site. It looks like it's just an old Windows app from I don't know when. And I don't think I would have trusted them if not you're mentioning them. Look at the bottom of their site even. They have one of these things that looks like a coupon that you're supposed to cut using scissors. Right?
That's right.
Like that old thing that used to work. I feel like nobody's done any A/B testing on it in a while. But
they have a Neil Patel testimonial at the bottom. But it's like at the very bottom of the page. That would be the very top thing.
That would add a lot of credibility. But you know it's an old site and an old quote because it's Neil Patel, CEO of QuickSprout, and he sold that site a while back. But that's a tool that you're using, and it seems like it's popular because as soon as I started typing in scrape, for some reason, Google suggested Scrapebox.
We don't use the tool, but to Scrapebox is a piece of software. You need some hosting that can, because if you're going to scrape the internet, you need a bunch of different IPs.
And so whatever they're using, that's what you decided you can use for your software.
Right. They're called proxies. Right. The company I remember now is called Storm Proxy. But there are a bunch of these proxy companies that will sell you a bunch of proxy IP addresses.
Okay. All right. So that's how you do it. And then do you do anything to come up with more creative ideas than other people have had?
Yeah.
What's your process for being creative?
So a lot of it's what we were talking about before. It's looking on the bubble. So about half our ideas come from kind of existing tests, mm-hmm. and about half come from thinking on the bubble, talking to someone that almost converted.
Got it. And then saying, what is it that kept you from doing it? And then got it. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And then are you using one of those modal pop-ups to come up if somebody's on a site for a long time? That works for you?
So we will go to the ends of the earth to try and get an edge on a test because we got skin in the game. We're losing money every time we run a test that doesn't work, right? We're losing my money. So we'll go to the ends of the earth to figure out why people aren't converting. I find talking to sales reps is a huge thing because they talk to lots of customers. So customers will tell them. I find mining live chats is huge. I find picking the brain of your competitors, you'd be surprised how often if you call up a competitor's customer service agent, they'll tell you something. I find physical stores really helpful. We did something for a big appliance seller, and we just went down to Home Depot and Lowe's and talked to the appliance salespeople there and just talked to people buying appliances. Like, hey, why are you buying a washer? What are you looking for? So anything you can do to get an edge and talk to customers on the bubble.
If you're talking to salespeople of a competitor, I should be doing that too for the interview. But if you're talking to them, do you say, why aren't people buying?
I won't say it straight out of the box, but we'll definitely, and we might phrase it in a different way. You're looking at washers, have a conversation. And then you might drop in like, hey, a good phrase that we'd use all the time is like, hey, what kind of questions do people usually ask? Pretend to be a little lost.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even really know what to ask you. Hey, what do people usually ask? I bet you, and I use this phrase, I bet you get asked the same 10 questions every time because you're anchoring them. You don't want to hear one or two things.
Right.
You want to hear 10. So I'm dropping that anchor. They're going to respond with one thing or two things. You summarize it back to them.
Uh-huh.
Oh, people really want to know about delivery time. They really want to know about energy consumption. What else?
Uh-huh.
And you do this a few times, and then at some stage, they'll cry uncle. But it's often you'll go back four or five times. But summarize, what else? And I'll tell you another
thing. You said these five things. What else? Makes sense.
Another really powerful thing is to say, hey, I notice and I'll do this with our client sales reps. It's harder to do with competitors. hey, this side effect of talking to me is it gets people's brain thinking. And I know an hour later you're going to come up, have this other idea. So when you have that idea, I want you to call, leave a business card and say, is it okay to, if I check in 3 days and just see if anything else? And of course they say yes. And so I'll have my assistant or someone else, just give them a call 3 days later and be like, hey, was there anything else? And every now and then you get.
That makes a lot of sense. I find that when I interview people, especially in the early days, they would come at the end of the interview and say, I just realized there was something else, which is why we started instituting pre-interviews. I pre-interviewed you here today, but we often will do, before COVID, we did a full-on producer pre-interview because people will come up with a bunch of things and they'll stammer through them. So the producer will put the list together. And then when they come on with me, they'll say, you know, Andrew, what I forgot to tell your producer was, and then they come up with the next thing because now their mind's been primed and the pressure's gone off. All right, give me one other thing. If somebody's listening to us who says, you know what, I'm not yet ready for Spiralize.
Yeah.
I want to do it myself. What's one thing that you suggest that they do for themselves?
So just get in this rhythm of talking to customers, especially customers on the bubble, creating a backlog of ideas, because you'll get 10 times more ideas than you can possibly test. Triaging that list. So that list, you want to prioritize things that are relatively easy to do first and that you think will have the most impact first. And then every day, every week, just pledge, I'm going to test one of the things on the list. And you'll be surprised. Imagine, it goes back to that analogy I told you at the start of the show. Imagine having this crazy uncle where you get to keep your winning bets and you don't pay for your losing bets. If you do one thing a week, and even if that, imagine only, you're terrible at testing. You're the world's worst tester. Your ideas are worse than chance, let's say. Only 1 in 10 of your things wins. That means you're going to get 5 wins a year. So even on a really small scale, and let's say each of those wins is a pretty pathetic win. It's a 7% win. You're 35%. You're making 35% more revenue, and on a profit basis, because it's all upside, you've already paid for those visitors. On a profit basis, you're probably up 50, 60, 70%.
And that's your whole business. What's a good size business for Spiralize? At what point should they be calling you?
So if someone is spending more than 100K a month on paid, then it's usually such a no-brainer. They're buying dollar bills for a quarter, and this is the greatest thing they've ever done.
And you're finding that people don't do that at 100K a month?
Testing, my guess is, at best, 3% of big companies test.
I wonder how many of my past interviewees would do it. Like, what was it, Brewmate? They're doing a bunch of ad buys. I wonder if they A-B test their stuff at all. Or if they're just A-B testing their ads, not their landing page.
Yeah, so it's funny. People do a lot of A-B testing of ads. Very little of the landing page. And even when they test, so I say 3% maybe are doing it seriously. Maybe 10% are doing, you know, we'll change a couple sentences here, button color there. Where at that scale, you should be running a lot of tests and you should be taking big, big swings. Like major, just redesign entire page.
And then what software do you use to let them redesign, to let your team redesign the page quickly?
Yeah. So we're lucky, we have the luxury of, we probably have 30 developers. Mm. And so we usually just redo it in code. So it's fast and we have extreme flexibility. But your listeners should not follow our example. You should use Google Optimize. It's free. It lets you change limited amounts of things visually just by dragging stuff around.
All right, fair point. You've got 30 developers and you're doing, what'd you say, 3 million in revenue?
Yeah.
And what are the developers that you can keep that many working?
So our business is a little quirky in that our fees are backloaded. So work, I'm getting paid for work now that I did last year, right? because we're on a performance basis.
Oh, wow. So dude, that's client, tough. Isn't it tough?
You just have to understand the business.
Yeah, that's just it.
We're really investing in a client, and then the payoff, a client will pay us over the course of 12 months after a win. So if I start working now, I probably get the first check 4 to 6 months from now, and then I'll keep getting paid for 12 months after that.
Wow, that's a tough way to be. All right. It's great for your customers, yeah, though. For anyone out there who is at the right size, if you're spending over $100,000 a month, or frankly, even if you're spending less and you're just kind of curious about this business, go check out Spiralize. Of course, we've got the name and everything linked up here in the show notes, but it's Spiralyze.com. And I want to thank two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first, if you are not yet creating landing pages and testing them, there's a good piece of software that'll do it for you. Right now, use it for free at clickfunnels.com/Mixergy. And second, if you have a hosting company and you think you could save some money, switch over to HostGator. If you don't yet have anything, go get started by working with HostGator, and you can find them at HostGator.com/Mixergy. Thanks for doing this interview, and thank you all for listening. Bye, everyone.